Welcome to the Librarian on Authors on the Air. I am the librarian host, Tabitha Pope. This is a trademark podcast owned solely by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network LLC on the web at authorsontheair.com. Tonight I have Karen Rainey, who has released her recent release is a beautiful historical romance. The cover's just wonderful, titled An American in Scotland. But she has been writing since she was five. Her first published work was The Maple Leaf, read over the school intercom when she was just in first grade. In addition to wanting to be a violinist, her parents had a special violin crafted for her when she was seven. She wanted to be a lawyer, a teacher, and most of all, a writer. Though the violin was discarded early, she admits a fascination with the law, and she volunteers as a teacher whenever needed. Writing, however, has remained an overwhelming love for her life, and you can find out more about her at her website, which is Karen Rainey, that's two N's, E-Y, .com, and there's a link right here on this page. And she's also on Facebook and Twitter. The links are there as well, and we'll come back to those again later. So let me bring her live on the show. Welcome to the show, Karen.
Well, thank you very much. I love your intro music.
Oh, I know.
It makes me kind of want to. Yeah, I just kind of want to slink in with a boa or something.
It's really nice. Yeah, it's very much the cigar smoky room. Yeah, wait till the lounge. You're gonna belt out a tune. Type of yeah. Yeah, we picked that one. It's supposed to be sultry. We're supposed to be chilling on a couch, you know, having this conversation. Nobody knows we're both here in Texas sitting on our own, in our own little place.
Yay.
I'm in my pajamas, by the way, and yeah, it's all good.
Are you really?
I am. I didn't even get out of them today. I'm a stay-at-home mom. I don't really, have to. So it's awesome. So welcome to the show, and we were talking before the show about that you are here in Texas. So guys, if you hear some rumbling in the background, we're both under thunderstorm warnings. She's in one part of Texas, I'm in another. We've had a lot of rain, so just, don't worry, it's not bombs or anything. It's just a good old Texas thunderstorm.
And in the background is, me whispering, thank you, God, thank you, God, thank you, God. I just put in a new landscaping in my backyard. And it's xeriscaping.
Uh-huh.
And the landscaper told me, make sure, that you water every 2 days. And I've been making the interval a little bit longer. And so, whenever it rains, I go, thank you. keep the plants alive.
Unless say you got to go out and water. So that's good.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, for the rest of the country, and you don't realize how that she actually lives out in the central part of Texas where it gets really hot and dry. So, yeah, I can totally understand you going xeriscaping, but wow, that's a lot of work.
Well, and the nice thing about it is it's late enough right now that you don't hear my dog. Okay, my dog only starts to bark when I get on the phone. But I have drugged my dog with kibble, and now he's asleep.
He's in a food coma.
And he's in a food coma at my feet, and he's on my feet, so my feet don't get cold. And the one thing I didn't think about xeriscaping, Tabitha, is my dog. Okay, they took out all the grass, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they contoured it so it looks like kind of a Japanese garden.
Oh, neat.
And then it's beautiful, but they laid down crushed granite, all right? And crushed granite is this light sandy color.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever the dog does his thing or leaves me a present, it's like a neon arrow is pointing to it, okay?
So find it.
I had no idea he left me so many presents during the day. So It's I was out there every single day, and finally it dawned on me, wait, I could be editing, you know, a manuscript. So I hired a company to come out and clean up his poop.
Oh.
You know, and I thought, I know. I never in my wildest dreams factored in poop cleanup, you know, after the landscaping was done. But, yeah.
Well, yeah. So. Otherwise, it looks like a bunch of landmines.
Oh, man. It is just, it's there. And I'm going, before I had the grass taken out, I only did cleanup like once a week. And I never found as much as I see now. And now I go, oh, my gosh. What was I living with?
Where was he hiding it?
I know. Exactly. What
That's
was he
funny.
Doing?
That's pretty funny. Well, you know, I guess it takes a clean slate to see what's hiding everywhere.
I know.
That's funny. Well, you know, it's really weird, though, that does. That industry has really picked up because a lot of people, you know, have moved into patio homes, you know, where they have, you know, they don't have a big yard or whatever. And that the poop cleanup business has really taken off. So, I mean, I know
well,
here in Houston it has. So
I let me tell you something. I hired this really great company, and the woman who owns it is just a darling. Okay, she is just wonderful. I never realized until the other day, however, that their car is, you know, painted to represent the name of the company. Okay? So, dear heavens, you know, three times a week, poop 911 pulls up in front of my house.
And everybody's like, well, that woman has some issues. Oh my God, how do we get on this tangent? That's hilarious.
Please bring an unmarked car. Please don't do that. And the car
That's
is
hilarious.
Black. And the lettering
yeah.
is white. You know? So
oh,
it's,
so it really
nice.
Yeah, I'll leave.
So here, you know, you know everything that's just new in my life, okay?
Yeah, there you go.
More than you ever
That's
wanted
funny.
To know.
Oh, some good stories could come out of that.
Really? Couldn't you just see a romance, though?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm serious.
The good guy.
Yeah. The guy comes to clean up the yard, you know. And the woman is a reclusive writer and, you know, all the taglines you could think of, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That would be awesome. Okay.
And
I'll have to add that one to my little list.
To you.
So. When I think of dog poop,
to
I think of you.
Who gave me the idea. Yeah.
Oh, my. Oh, okay. Now, focus. Okay, back. I mean, well, we were talking about writing, right? There we go.
Right.
So.
I know. How do you top that?
I know. Like, how do I start here? Back to your love of writing. You're very creative. You got something out of that. When you started, well, obviously, writing has always been your thing. So when you decided you were going to actually, you know, write something to sell for publication. Where were you in your life? What point in your life were you when you said you were going to do that? Cause you have quite a backlist. You're not a first time writer. You have a great backlist. So obviously you've been a New York Times bestseller and a USA Today bestseller. So you've got a lot of experience. So tell us newbies here, when did you decide it, and how do you approach that?
Well, here's the deal. Here's a bit of profundity for you. I had been through some pretty gruesome things. I had lost my husband and lost my son, one of my children. And it was, my mother had died, and it was like the fourth or fifth death in my family within like two or three years. And it was like,
wow,
a light went off. You know, and the light was like, Karen, if you really are serious about your writing, you better do something, because life is imperfect and imprecise, and you never know how much time you've got. You know, so I did something. I was very, very well paid at a very good job, and I walked in one day, and I told my boss, I said, I want you to lay me off, because I'm going to take a year off, and I'm going to become a writer, and I'm going to be published in that year. It was the stupidest thing I had ever done. You know, but it was a step. You've heard that expression, a step out on faith.
Uh-huh.
You know, that was kind of what I did. I said, you know, I believe in myself, and I'm going to do this. I didn't know diddly squat about the publishing industry. I didn't know how long it was going to take. I didn't know that I'd nearly go bankrupt before I did get published. But I did. I took all the money I had in my savings, and I went home, and I bought myself a computer, and I started to write. And man, when I stop and think about all of the hurdles I jumped through, and I jumped through hurdles. I had the agent from hell, you know, and it was, you know, I hear people talk about, you know, how difficult it is to get an agent, and it was very difficult to get published the first time. It took like 3 years. You know, for somebody to take a chance on me. And then after that, it was just easy. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But the first 3 years were just awful. And I think I paid my dues. You know, I feel like I paid my dues, but I learned a lot along the way. And I learned one of the things that you always have to do, regardless of what position you're in, whether you publish through Amazon now, or, you know, go the traditional route, whatever it is, you have to fight for your work. You know, you have to believe in it, and you have to fight for yourself, you know, because you do that all the time anyway, whether it's a bad review or if it's piracy or whatever it is. You know, you have to believe in yourself, and you have to believe in your work, you know, and determination, I think, is, and I'm not just, you know, I'm not patting myself on the back, but there's an expression, there's a quote from Calvin Coolidge that I've had on my wall forever and ever, and it's about persistence, and it's the one word I would take from people who want to do something to people who do something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Be persistent, you know,
persistent.
Believe in yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So take that leap of faith.
Yes. Do something. You know, do something to shock yourself. Sometimes, don't do what I did. You know, don't go, you know, don't do what I did. After that year, it was very difficult to get a job, because I was trying to explain to people, you know, that I had left this very well-paying job to be a writer. Well, aren't you still wanting to be a writer? Yes, but I have to buy groceries, you know?
Yeah.
And I ended up getting some really awful jobs, you know? Like, oh, just, I worked as an expediter for a sausage casing company. They sold pig guts. Yeah.
Oh. That's almost as good as the dog poo.
I know. I was trying to find pig intestines, you know, all over the country. I know. It's like, you know, but these are all things that you can use in your writing later on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, nothing is ever wasted. That's one thing that's wonderful about, you know, it's not more than one thing, but that's a really great thing about being a writer. You don't lose anything. You know, you're a great big funnel, and everything,
right.
Every experience, every person you meet, you know, goes into the top of this funnel and it comes out in your writing.
Yeah. You have to use your life experiences. I mean, where else would you draw from? I mean, I don't, you know, at least for some of it, to get started or for the basis, you know.
Well, you know that expression, write what you know.
Uh-huh.
I think people have messed that up. I think they think that writing what you know means only writing your experiences. Well, if that was the case, I could never write historical romance, you know, because
right.
I didn't live in the 19th century. You know, I think writing what you know means writing what you feel and what you have felt, you know. People always mention my very first published book to me, and it was Tapestry. And Tapestry was this really angst-filled journey of this woman who was trying, who absolutely adored this next-door neighbor of hers. And she, the first half of the book, she tricks him, you know,
mm-hmm.
into employing her, and then they marry. And then the next half of the book is he leaves and dies. And she has to come to grips with learning to live without someone who defined life to her, okay? And there's a happy ever after, you know, at the end. There has to be. But in the meantime, she struggles to learn how to come to grips with grief. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And that was one of those books that came from my personal experience. You know, that was writing what I know. And I think we as authors have to know people, and we have to know ourselves as a person, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if we didn't know people, we couldn't write characters.
Right,
and
exactly.
You can always tell, I think, you can always tell a writer who doesn't like people very much, you know, because they might write really nasty people
right,
really
right.
well, you know,
yes.
And you're going, I don't like any of these people, lady.
I don't even
you
like
know,
your hero. Yeah.
I know. It's like something's off a little. You know, and but you have to, you know, you have to like people. You have to understand them, you know, I think. So
well,
writing
I,
what you know to me is writing what you feel.
Well, exactly. And I agree with your comment about, you know, writing characters. You know, I mean, I think that developing characters is kind of a study in human nature. You really got to understand how humans work, how they're, you know, how they think, how they process things, and how their relationships, you know, the intricate details of how they work together, you know, how that communication happens between people. Because how can you write authentic characters and authentic dialogue that sounds like what people actually say to one another in that certain situation, no matter what time period it's in, unless you understand that? You know, and then you add, like what you're saying about historical, you add the aspect of you've got to really know that in Victorian times or Regency times or even further back, you've got to know how people interacted back then, because there was the differences in class. There was, you know, the disparity between the sexes and everything else. So there's a lot that goes into writing good characters, authentic characters anyway. That people won't identify with it otherwise. So, yeah. I mean,
I always get amused when people say, you know, writing is a solitary occupation, you know, because honestly, you know, at the risk of sounding like a, you know, like I have schizophrenia, you know, I got all these people in my head, you know.
Yeah.
and they come out on paper. And trust me, there are times when I just have to go and shut my office door and say, stay there, you know, don't come out, you know. But and you made an excellent point about the mores of the time in which you write. And it's kind of like I always come up against this problem because I'm a 21st century woman trying to think about how a 19th century woman would sound. And it's one of the reasons why I can't do dialect anymore. My early books, you know, a lot of my books feature Scotland, and some of my earlier books, okay, I confess, I was guilty. You know, I said things like, you kin, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
somebody hit me over the head with a stiff piece of tartan, you know? But I'm 21st century woman trying to figure out how a 19th century woman in Scotland would talk. Okay, there aren't any tape recorders recordings.
Nope.
Okay? So all I can do is go by what I know of, you know, the vernacular written down by people like Burns. We wouldn't understand a book. We couldn't read a book if it was written totally in vernacular because we couldn't understand the language.
Exactly.
So I have to translate it. I have to translate it for a 21st century reading audience. Okay? Mm. So that comes out with a lot of, especially in 19th century Scotland, the upper classes were educated in England or in Edinburgh, and they were educated with the Queen's English. You know, they weren't speaking Scottish English.
Gaelic was dying,
Yeah. So I don't do dialect. And when sometimes people don't understand that the independence of a 21st century woman is not the way a 19th century woman felt.
Right.
You know, she didn't go off and want love instead of, you know, daddy decreeing marriage. You know, she did what daddy decreed, you know. And
they wanted that.
You know, I don't think they said, and I'm not, and here's another thing. We are all individuals, you know. We may have this surrounding kind of morality that we follow, but we're all different, you know. And I may decide to you know, crawl out the bedroom window at night, you know, and go exploring. You know, that isn't to say that it was okay to crawl out my bedroom window and go exploring, you know.
Yeah.
We're not all in this little kitchen hole, you know.
Yeah, not everybody fits into the mold, that's for sure.
No. Yeah. And I warn you, my dog is blinking at me.
Oh, he says, oh, you're on the phone, Mom.
I know. There may be barking at any moment.
That's okay. Our executive producer, she has 5 cats. So when she does her show, sometimes they get in a big bite. So it's okay.
Oh, you know, talk about a cat fight.
Yeah, a total cat fight. So when you, you've written contemporary and you've written historical. So what, I mean, I think you've written more historical, right, than the contemporary. Which is where you're most comfortable, or does it just depend on what story is inspiring you to write?
Well, you know, it comes down to voice, and my contemporary voice is different from my paranormal voice, which is different from my historical voice. I think historical romance is challenging because I have to keep it within the confines of what actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
I get tickled when people say, "Well, she's really into history." Well, yeah, it's historical romance. You know?
Yeah.
I love the way that, I don't know if you ever saw this show. It was on a decade or so ago. It was called Connections. And what it was is showing how a discovery, you know, of 1,000 years led to something that we're doing daily, you know. And that's how I feel about history. To me, it fascinates me, you know, to know that a man in the 18th century decided that he was going to come up with this counting mechanism that was a cylinder of numbers. And that led to the first computer, you know, which led to what we know today as computer, you know. So mm-hmm. all these little transitionary steps fascinate me, you know.
Yeah.
The latest book I just wrote was all about fingerprints, you know, and how they mm-hmm. they came to be, you know. So the historical aspect of it is, like I said, more challenging because I have to be true to the time and the period uh-huh. and the society. I think the most freeing voice I have is paranormal because I can make up my own world.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, I can, if I want to have a two-headed hydrangea, I can, you know, or a snake with a purple belly, you know.
Yeah.
I don't have to follow anybody else's rules but mine, you know. And somebody
do you find it, when you do that world building, do you find it hard to remember your rules and stay, you know, I don't think I could do it.
I wish I could say that, no, I remember everything, but no, I don't remember everything. I have to create a Bible.
Okay.
You know, for lack of a better word, you know, and I have to say, okay, if this creature explodes when he's near wine, then you have to remember that for book two, you know?
Right.
And
yeah.
All of those rules, you know, have to be in the Bible. And and the more complex my trilogies become, you know, I have to have a Bible for those too. You know, because the family, you know, relationships and who said what to whom, you know, that will the overarching character arc, you
mm-hmm.
know, pardon me for being redundant there, arching character arc.
Arching character arc. That's okay.
Yeah.
Got the picture. No, I always just find that, I love to read paranormal, and I just think that it's fascinating, you know, being a beginning writer, that people can build these amazing worlds and, you know, they write within their own rules and stay within them, because I would have pieces of paper, probably sticky notes. Don't forget you got to make sure the dragon doesn't do this. And
oh, exactly. And that's exactly what the Bible is. It's like, I always used Word up until like 8 years ago. And I discovered, I think it was eight, maybe it was, you know, shorter than that. I discovered Scribner, you know, and mm-hmm. I love Scribner. And I just, you know, create a Scribner file, you know, for my Bible, and everything goes in there. You know, weird character names, you know, because you start off writing, every book you write is about relationships, whether you call it a romance or whatever, you know. Because it's not about trees, it's not about bushes, it's not about dogs or cats, it's about relationships.
Right.
Now, sometimes those are romantic relationships, sometimes they're not, but they're always about relationships. between people. Okay, and a lot of times when you start writing, you start with just a couple or maybe three people, and then before you know it, you know, before the book is over, you've got 50 characters.
Right.
You know, and it's like, wow, you know, because when you started the book, you never thought that you were going to need this character or that character, or, you know, whatever. But that's
then
what
you add
surprises
the,
me.
Then you add a second book and a third book in the series, and you've got these characters kind of running in and out throughout. So, yeah, I can see your point. And, you know, you've got to remember who did what and what they are and their strange name. And
I cannot tell you how many times I've gone, oh, God, who is so-and-so's butler? You know? Like, and the worst thing, and I don't, you know, I read something that James Patterson wrote the other day, and I was going, oh, well, thank God. Because up until that point, I thought I was weird. I'm in good company if I'm weird. I think it was James Patterson. Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm not really sure. So, all right, let's. When I finish a book, okay, I never, ever read it in paperback or hardback. I never read the finished copy. Okay, I'm done. I have, by that time, written the book, edited the book, and read it probably 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not exaggerating. Okay, I'm done. All right.
Yeah.
So I start a new book, and the old book is just gone. It's out of my mind. And I get these lovely letters from people saying, are you ever going to write Robert's story? And I'm going, who?
Like, who
is Robert?
The hell is Robert?
I don't know who Robert is, okay? And I'm going, duh. You know, or is Margaret ever going to get her own book? Who the hell is Margaret? You know, at least tell me, you know, what book she comes from.
I really ought to have
this one master list, because the last time I counted, and this is once upon a time, I could recite all the books I wrote. Okay, now I can't, you know, because I get lost. I'm like at 55 now.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah. So your list was pretty expensive.
Yeah, between the books that have been published, the ones that are in the pipeline, and the ones that I'm just finishing up, they're about 55. I don't know who's what, you know, where, or when, you know, or when someone says, you know, I really liked your plot twist in The Devil Wears Tartan, and I'm going, oh, you know,
okay,
I'm
great.
Not there. Yeah, thank you.
Refresh my memory on that one.
Yes. Well,
funny.
And if it wasn't James Patterson, it was another famous author who said,
right,
I don't have the slightest idea, you know, who's what,
well,
where.
It's probably good that, so, well, let's go from there. So if you're going to write a series, if you, let's say you're going to write the trilogy, like you were saying, do you write them all back to back to back so that you can just then do the information dump and get it out? Or are you able, do you have to go back and read them again to figure, you know, start over in the next one? Or?
Well, and see, I keep a copy as a reference, you know,
mm-hmm.
I keep a copy either in proof form or in digital form so that I can go back and scan it if I have to. But I try, it depends on what kind of book I'm writing. My historical romances tend to be very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And they, I always think, okay, it's always been my opinion, that you have to experience the emotions the characters are experiencing, okay, in order to do justice to the characters in the book, okay? And some of my books just absolutely drain me. I mean, when I'm done, I'm I'm exhausted, you know. So the very last thing I want to do is start another historical romance, okay? So a lot of times I will, you know, slide in a different kind of book in between those really emotional ones,
uh-huh.
you know, where
lighter.
I can get lighthearted. Yeah. So it means I might go heavy, dark, you know, mm-hmm. or heavy, light, you know, and
yeah.
it's better if I go heavy, light, because I really, and here's another thing, it's going to sound odd. I think you have to fall in love during the course of the book, you know, and it's
mm-hmm.
like you really have to feel something for those characters. You have to suffer along with them. And so consequently, when the book is done, it's like this giant purging thing, you know? And you don't need therapy.
Right. Write a book. Yeah. I mean, and it's true. It's true. But I think that, you know, you saying that you're experiencing these things as it lends to the authenticity of your characters and helps people, rather than just sympathize with characters, they're actually able to empathize, you know, with your main character and get in her feet, you know, step in her shoes and be in her body and be experiencing the story, because you're
right,
putting that into it.
Right, and I want people to feel. Yeah. I go back to Tapestry as an example of emotion, okay, because there was, I shorted out a keyboard writing Tapestry, you know, because I had Paganini in the background, okay, and I am typing along just sobbing. these tears are just coming out of me. And no kidding, my keyboard was wet, you know, and it never fails that people always tell me about this one section in the book where they didn't think they could read any further because they were crying so hard. And I mm-hmm. thought, you know, that's it right there. If you can convey feeling, you
mm-hmm.
know. My grandmother was just a brilliant woman, and she used to quote or say this thing. She said, the greatest thing in the whole wide world is one thought traveling from one mind to another. You know?
Right.
So if you can do that with feelings, if you can make somebody feel what you're feeling, you know, isn't that the greatest experience?
I agree.
And if you can get so...
No, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, if you could get so wrapped up in a book, you know, that it changes your life
mm-hmm.
or changes your day, you know, to heck with your life, you know, if it just changes your day or changes your mood or gives you hope or mm-hmm. inspires you in some way, you know, isn't that the greatest gift? You know,
and
I thank God for readers, you know, I think reading is just the most wonderful kind of virtual reality there is.
Yeah, I agree. I think that,
you know, when
I know for sure I can tell you that reading has got me through tough times in my life. I know plenty of other people who have said that, oh, you know, I've heard it from callers who call in and say, oh, this, you know, your book, such and such, got me through one of the worst times of my life. And it didn't even have anything to do with relationships or anything. Like, it was just that it was so emotional that it kind of helped them boost themselves up and move on, you know. So
exactly. And isn't that the greatest compliment a writer could get?
Oh, I would think so. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it is to me, you know, and it's humbling. You know, it's really mm. humbling. It's like, well, thank you, you know. Do you know what you just said to me, you know? It's
well,
something
it's like
that I'll
have magic
live,
power.
Live on. Yeah. You know, and it's just, you know, and I have been very blessed. I've gotten, you know, calls or emails from people who say, you know, one of them was, you know, the woman who read my book while she was waiting for her sister to finish her chemotherapy. I mean, please, you know, does that just not knock you off your pins? You know, and you want to reach out and give her a cyber hug, you know, and say thank you, you know. I'll remember that forever.
Right. That is a huge, huge thing, huge compliment. And you feel, I mean, you finally, it's hard to get things back as a writer. I mean, you can watch your sales and everything else, but unless you're getting those things back, I don't think you really get that, oh, I did it. You know, this is what I wrote for. It wasn't just for me. It was for this. So yeah, that's very cool.
And it was that communication, you know, that thought traveling from one mind to another. And it's that connection that an author feels with a reader. Again, I go back to, you know, writing is such a solitary thing. I don't find it to be solitary. You know, I know that when I'm writing, you know, I've got this connection with this reader, you know, and it's kind of like I used to think of it like I'm on the outside of this deep, dark cave, okay, and I'm holding this lantern, and I take somebody's hand, and we're walking into the cave together, and I'm holding the lantern aloft, you know, so that we can see, and it's like this reader and I are going into this cavern of imagination, you know, and heaven knows what's going to happen on the other side, you know, but I have somebody with me, you know.
Yeah, that's a really cool visual though to have when you're approaching your writing, because that's true. You're not alone. You're taking that reader on that journey with you. So yeah, that's very cool. I like that.
And that cavern is my mind, and it can be a scary place. Maybe
I imagine this
911.
If yours is scary, I'd hate to be in Stephen King. Yeah.
Please.
Yeah, his cave has got to be real scary with clowns and weird things that jump out at you. And...
Oh, you know, I have hated clowns all my life, and his it didn't do anything to help that.
No kidding. I'm going to put the number out. Oh, go ahead.
Okay. No, I love Stephen King's work, but I don't think I would want to be in his mind.
No way.
Yeah, uh-uh.
Not a place I don't think I feel safe.
Yeah. You know, it's like, I'm sorry, is anybody here but me?
I'm going to put the number out, and if you want to call in, we'll be giving away one copy to a caller of Karen's latest book, which is An American in Scotland, and she's going to tell us a little bit about it, but let me put the number out. It's 347-633-9609. So somebody call in, and we'll give you a paperback copy of the book. So tell us just a little bit about, this is the second one in that series, correct?
No, it's the third, actually.
It's the third, okay.
The trilogy is about a family, the McKeons, and that kind of separated after the 45 in Scotland. One son went to live in Glasgow, and the other went to England, and the third went to America. And this is the story of the American branch of the family, kind of, sort of. There's nothing really ever straightforward in any of my books. They just aren't. But it's a story of Rose McKeon, and she is going by the name of Rose McKeon, and she isn't really a McKeon, but she goes to Scotland to try to convince a relative to buy the cotton that she has in America. And I don't know if a lot of people knew this. I certainly didn't realize the extent before I started doing research, but Scotland was really instrumental in helping the South in the Civil War. And one of the reasons they helped so well is the Clyde shipbuilders built ships that went through the blockade runners. Mm-hmm. In fact, the United States was so hacked off at the English for extending the war by at least 2 years that they sent the UK a bill, you know, for millions and millions of dollars. Uh-huh. And they actually ended up paying a portion of that. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't know that.
I know. Yeah, it was fascinating to me. And to the extent that Scotland was decimated, the cotton mills in Scotland were decimated because they didn't have any product, you know, that was coming out of the South and because of the blockade. And so it's a romance that's intertwined with real history, and it goes into to a plantation in the South, and it's in the middle of the Civil War, and it was a very difficult kind of sensitive thing to write about, you know, to write about slavery. And from the reviews, I think I did it well, you know, but I wanted to make sure it was right, you know, and
right.
And so my research was voluminous.
Not
and
bad.
Yeah, gee, I was reading books like you think you know the Civil War, you know, those kind of things.
Yeah. Well, that's the cool thing about being a historical author is that you get to learn, you know, right along with the rest of us. I mean, I've learned so much from some of the historical romances that I've read, stuff that I never would have researched myself, you know.
Oh, no.
But then I picked up a book about it after, yeah.
Well, and one of the things that fascinated me, for example, was Clydesdales. You know, the Budweiser horse?
Uh-huh.
They were developed along the Clyde River in Scotland.
Oh, fascinating.
And that's why they're called Clydesdale.
Clydesdale, all right.
And they hauled wagons full of timber and you know, brass fittings for the ships along the wharf. And, see, I never put together the Clyde River and the Clydesdale horse,
right.
You know, so... I learned something interesting every day, you know, and, but I, from now on, I think I'm going to try to hit an era that isn't so difficult, you know, I think I'm going to stick to the 19th century, but I'm going to stay away from slavery.
Yeah,
no.
That one, maybe, it, like you said, it's a little sensitive, and if you don't get it right, there's going to be some outcry. So, yeah. So, good for you.
Yeah.
I mean, glad you've gotten the good reviews instead of the ones that people would normally put up just to be jerks.
Well,
a lot of those.
And here's
lately.
The deal. We have to, we are, I don't want to get into it, but we have 21st century thoughts, okay?
Right.
And people in the 19th century thought differently about a
right.
lot of things.
Yeah.
You know? There's a fine line where you're sensitive to both points of view,
mm-hmm.
And you have to walk it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's why paranormals are so much easier. You know?
right?
Yeah. You don't like DC? Well, you know, we'll make a lion with a purple face, you know, whatever. Yeah. So,
yeah, no,
you know,
I understand.
I
agree with you on that, though.
It's a difficult line that you have to walk sometimes, and you walk it.
Well, and, you know, that can even go to, I mean, even take the slavery and other sensitive issues about it, you know, people trying to understand Pride and Prejudice that you know, from this, you've got to be in the mind of the people of that time period to really understand how that these weren't a bunch of gold digging women. This is how you moved up in the world. The only way you moved up in the world was to get a favorable marriage, you know, a good position. And, you know, a man with four daughters, five daughters was
exactly
up a creek.
Yeah. Well, so, and one of the criticisms the first book got from just one reviewer, but it flummoxed me because it was, don't you just love that word, flummox? That's a historical romance author's word, you know? But she was saying that the Duncan, who is the mill owner, should have refused to take cotton from Scotland because of slavery. And I'm going, no. No.
Maybe if this was now.
But no.
Yeah.
You know, people didn't think that way. It was, and also, you know, if you are given a choice between starving to death, you know, or taking something that possibly, you know, a stolen loaf of bread, which one are you going to do? You know? So
it's,
you know, no, he wouldn't have, you know, he wouldn't have been on his high horse about not taking cotton. You know, it was like regrettable, but they did it, you know?
And
a lot of what we think of, you know, as normal thoughts or mores or whatever for our 21st century, you got to be careful when you go back, you know? And you can't, you have to understand that the 19th century was different.
Absolutely.
It was a totally different place.
Yeah. And the 20th century, I mean, there was so many changes that happened. You've got to be really careful about what you're talking about at what part of the 20th century. So, I mean, even then, you know, I mean, at the beginning of the 20th century, women didn't have the right to vote. So there was differences.
No, and that, and just, and stop and think about it. It's only been in the 1920s
right
that women have had the right to vote. That is, you know, that's less than 100 years.
And women didn't start wearing pants till like the late 40s, really. I mean, they wore pants in certain places, but like in general, they didn't. So, you know, we're putting on our blue jeans.
If you were raised by a Southern Belle like I was, you know, God help you. If you wore anything that was improper in public, you know, I was told that you don't eat in public. You know, other than a restaurant. You can't go, you cannot grab a hot dog in New York and go strolling down the street.
Yeah.
You know, a lady does not do it.
Yeah.
It has to be said just that way. A lady, you
a
know,
lady.
Does not
yes.
do something. Yes, a lady. Yeah.
Yep.
It's okay. No, go back to sleep.
No. Did he talk to you?
No, he's, you know, he kind of rolls over and he's, he's a guy. What can I say?
Well, we all have him. So we have about 5 minutes left. Tell us what you have on the burners, so to speak. What are you working on now?
A brand new trilogy, historical romance trilogy about Duke. Okay. Mm-hmm. I have normally, when I write about the peerage, I've normally reserved myself to earls because there were so many more of them. I think there were only like 21 dukes in England at any one particular time. But I have thrown caution to the winds and I am doing a series about dukes.
Okay.
And, the first one's already written, and it's called The Scottish Duke. And then I don't know what we're going to call the next one, but it will happen in England. And then the third one will be kind of an American duke. And there's at least three incidents that I discovered where a family died out in England or in Scotland, and the heirs were found in America. And, you know, they were given the title and asked to come back to live in the home country.
Mm-hmm.
And I've written about that with one of my books. And it's called A Borrowed Scot, about someone who became an earl. But this is an actual duke, you know. So they're kind of fun books, but they're very emotional, too.
Yeah,
you know,
that was good. Yay! Okay. And what else? You've got that trilogy going, and then you got any other light stuff coming too?
I've got another book called The Lottery, which is a spinoff of the paranormal books, and
okay.
It's about a werewolf who doesn't want to be a werewolf. And I. Yes, and she called, instead of werewolf, she goes by the name of a furry, you know, and she absolutely refuses, you know, she doesn't want to be a furry anymore. So, and the strangest thing, you know, I've discovered that when I'm hacked off at something in my personal life, I can always use that irritation in one of my books, you know?
Absolutely.
And I can, yeah, and I can, you know, the characters can, you know, be hacked off at Facebook like I am, you know? And what do you mean you make me do this? You know, but that book should be out in a month or so. So,
cool.
You know,
that's
it's
good.
Fun,
you've
and I'm enjoying
things,
it.
You've got a lot of things in the pipeline.
Yeah, and I have a novella coming out, a couple of those in the next year. And then, let's see, the first book in the new trilogy is coming out in December. Yeah, so lots of stuff.
Going to be a busy, busy lady. So tell everyone.
I am.
Tell everyone where they can find you. Your website is just your name, right? Karen Ranney. It's
yes.
Two N's, RANNEY.com. And you have a newsletter. You can sign up there for your newsletter.
I do.
Okay.
I do. And I have, I'm on Twitter, which, you know, I've got to be honest with you. I am not a Twitter phobe, a Twitter feed.
Twitter,
I do
yeah.
not tweet. Yeah, I don't tweet all that much. Yeah. And,
Facebook's worth it.
Pardon?
Facebook's where it's at.
I didn't hear you. Yeah.
I said Facebook's more like,
Well, you know what? I was reading the news or something. I was on a news website and I stumbled onto a tweet.
But we have about a minute.
Kim Kardashian.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going, holy cow, I'm glad I don't tweet. It's like, no.
Anyway, I agree.
I've enjoyed it terribly.
I'm glad you had a good time, and I have really enjoyed having you on. We have to make sure everybody, you can also find her Amazon author page as well, so check her out there. So thanks for being on.
There too.
And it's been lovely, and hopefully the thunderstorms won't get you too bad tonight.
Oh, they can get me now. You know, now that I'm, you know, almost all tucked up in bed, you know.
Yeah.
Fine. Yeah.
Well, you have a
all
lovely
right. Thank
evening.
Thank you, Tabitha.
And we'll talk
okay,
talk
you
soon.
You too.
All right.
Alrighty.
Good
bye-bye.
Evening.